that from fees, about 0.3, about 300,000 from federal funds. School response. Total program, about $2.2 million, a little under 100,000 general fund, and the rest of it being other fees. Again, the different categories. Remedial action, that's the so-called state super fund. Total cost, about $6.3 million, about $5 million of that being the fees, the $20 per ton at Arlington, and the almost 800,000 federal funds.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Brown.
Fred, is your data pretty solid to come up with those fee estimates for all these various programs?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Brown, in terms of the total dollars, the answer is yes, that's what's in the governor's budget and so on. But again, let me stress that we have not gone through a public hearing process to determine whether or not, instead of $50 per facility or per transport, whether or not it be, you know, less or more. The total dollars to be raised from that, yes.
I know about total dollars, but I'm talking really about the number of tanks out there and generators and so forth. Are your estimates pretty good on those numbers, so that your estimates are pretty accurate, do you think?
Chairman, we believe Senator Brennan, yes, we believe that the universe that we have is accurate, and if anything, it understates the number of people that potentially would be subject rather than overstating them, which is to say that the fees would go down to the same dollar amount.
And you'll be all prepared then, if it's generating more money than you thought, to adjust them down?
Yes. We, in fact, in most of the statutes, in fact, direct that we will, in fact, readjust fees to be able to ensure that we do not accumulate undue dollars.
Mm-hmm.
The legislation has caps in it. Can't have more than a certain amount at the end of the biennium.
Okay.
It hasn't been expended.
Okay. Thank you. Any further questions for them on this overview of the four bills and how they fit together and how they get funded?
We will be having some meetings with various people to try to find some ways to fund this more directly and not move forward on all the... Well, we may have to temporarily move forward on all these fees, but hopefully can I find a way to fund it more permanently and thereby eliminate the fees. But we'll come back to you with that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Obviously, any other questions you have, let us know, but it gives you at least a sense of where it is dollar-wise.
Okay. Thank you very much. Before I open the hearing on Senate Bill 115, I neglected to deal with the introduction of committee bills, so let me move very briefly to the introduction of committee bills. There are two LC drafts that you have before you. LC 2737, which is at the request of Ed Sullivan relating to land use. And LC 3050, which is at the request of Senator Yee and the Sweet Home Chamber of Commerce relating to destination resorts.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Monroe.
I move that we introduce these two LCs, 2737 and 3050, at the request of the so-stated parties.
Senator Monroe moves that these bills be introduced by the committee. Is there any objection to committee introduction? Hearing none, so ordered. Okay, now we open the hearing on Senate Bill 115. Actually, let's... Senate Bill 115. Which is the underground storage tank bill. And Michael McLucas from the Oasis Resort. You have to agree to tell us where the Oasis Resort is.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I am Mike McLucas. I am, my wife and I own and operate the Oasis Resort in beautiful downtown East Maupin, Oregon.
East Maupin?
Yes. and were perhaps better known for milkshakes and hamburgers on a hot day or for the Wild Fish and Wine Fest that occurs in the fall.
All right.
However, today I'm here to talk about none of these things, unfortunately. I guess the first thing I would want you to know is that I don't dress up in cowboy formal and leave in the teeth of a blinding snowstorm to come down here, unless, in fact, I am concerned.
Okay.
And indeed, I am concerned. I contacted my legislator and asked about Senate Bill 115 originally. He sent me a copy, which I tried to digest in the privacy of my own home, and I became quite paranoid. I then later did some further investigation and found out that if my reading is correct, even though not intended, I may also be subject to 116, 122, 123, or portions thereof, because we have, in addition to our small cafe and cabins, a couple of Chevron gas pumps that have sat outside for 40 or more years. And we do serve the motoring public and in a location that wouldn't be considered prime by anybody but ourselves, but we derive at least a small portion of our income from same. Now, you should have in your hands at this point a letter which I drafted and sent to you. That, in fact, is it. I would ask at the top where I say 115 that you merely add 116, 122, and 123, because I'm concerned about all of them, and I didn't even know about them when I wrote the letter. And rather than read that, and as in fact you have it in front of you, and in the interest of time, let me just give you some comments and then attempt to answer any questions that you might have. From my reading of these bills, all of these bills pose very significant additional costs to our operation. We're small, and in fact our standard rejoinder is our business is so small you got to go outside to change your mind. But we're not members of any trade associations, and any testimony that I give you today is solely as a small entrepreneur, an individual businessman. But I would ask you to sort of multiply the impacts that I see by perhaps several thousand small businesses. Now, in my letter, I think I leaned a little bit on the east of the Cascades because we always feel a little bit lost out there. But I think, in very truth, it's the same thing can be said up and down the Willamette Valley and a number of the smaller communities all over the state. The thing I wonder about and some questions I would pose to the committee, everything I read says about 1990 we're going to go into another gas crunch. In other words, OPEC and the rest of them are going to get back in the business and gas prices are going to climb. I invite you to remember, if you will, in the long gas lines that you encountered at that time and how happy you were to find a small filling station anywhere that didn't have a line that you could get into. And one of the things that made Oregon continue to operate during all that time was the fact that each one of these little individual operations, in fact, had an allotment from a major supplier that could not be denied them. They could count on a percentage of what was coming down the pipeline. The impact that I see in these bills and in the costs associated with them for small businesses such as ours to meet them, we're going to go out of business. We have no choice except just to shut down the pumps, abandon the tanks, and say, we can't afford to stay in this business. Now, if that in fact happens, and I submit to you that I think there's every realistic potential that it will, think about 1990 and where you're going to get gas. In my letter, I also took you on a little tour of a part of Southeast Oregon that I love. And think about all the little towns along that route. And in virtually each case, you're very, very happy to see the next set of pumps you drive up to, because a side trip up to Steens Mountain or out to Roaring Springs Ranch or something else has deleted your supply, and you're counting on that little place, wide spot in the road, to tank up. My genuine fear is that that little place isn't going to be there. It's going to be gone. Project, if you will, that same absence of having that facility available when you talk about promoting tourism for the state of Oregon. Two-thirds of our state is in the eastern portion, east of the Cascades. It's pretty well spread out. You don't go from corner to corner station. You go hundreds of miles sometimes before you find the next place. And if the costs that I see associated with this bill are visited upon those little places, they're just going to go away. They can afford to do nothing else. Under the umbrella that these bills propose, I think big business can survive. And in fact, I think what you're going to end up with is a very significant monopolistic sort of a tendency in the petroleum industry. In other words, only the very major can hope to survive. And one of the things that's kept gasoline
viable in Oregon for the average motorist, the fact that there's a lot of competing companies out there. But I don't think all of them are still going to be here after these bills go into effect. I really don't. I didn't have the advantage, let's say, of the little color chart that came off the Xerox machine that you saw. When you're talking about cost, one of the things that hit me was the average place, the average, the normal owner that they referred to had 15 different locations. Well, we've only got one. It isn't very big.
No, well, they actually, they said the normal, I forget what the word is, distributor that owns gas stations owns 15. But they also had, as part of their chart, they had a description about the impact on a single gas station with three tanks. I mean, that was their first example. It was a single gas station with three tanks.
Okay, well, we have
so they are looking at that. They're not just thinking everybody owns 15.
Okay, good, good.
Yeah.
The other thing, I guess, that bothers me is that it would seem to me that these bills and sort of the umbrella that they pose tends to place the small filling station somewhat in the same league with PCBs and extremely toxic substances. Petroleum is viewed as being, you know, extremely hazardous, etc. Somehow I would hope that simple petroleum motor fuels, which are commonly understood by virtually everyone, and further are commonly treatable with standard equipment. In other words, if you take a gasoline spill, in the rural fire department, I spent a number of years as a volunteer, and we were well schooled in what to do with gasoline and petroleum products. It was technology was available in every department, and the people understood how to react to it. The same is certainly not true of some of the more exotic chemicals, pesticides, insecticides, and so on. But in these bills, the owner of a petroleum service station is classified basically as having this quote-unquote hazardous thing at his disposal. He's sort of married in with all of these tremendously complicated threats to the environment, when in fact there is a threat, but it's a fairly simple one. It's easy to spot and it's fairly easy to solve. So I would hope that somehow as you go through these bills that you can make some allowances so that we don't end up, as I say, married under this umbrella and not really, I think, legitimately in terms of risk, justifiably placed there. Insurance costs are something that this legislature is going to hear a lot about, has heard a bunch about already. The effect of these bills, our insurance costs are exorbitant now. The wording in these bills and the way we're classified, it seems to me, is nothing but an escalator. We're going to see even more prohibitive costs for insurance just because we have a couple of pumps out front and an underground tank or two. All owners of underground tanks, the way I read these bills, basically are presumed either guilty or at serious risk unless and until they continually prove their innocence at substantial cost. In other words, we aren't given much going in. We're looked at as a potential and serious risk, and it's the burden of proof is on the owner of the tank. There's presumed sort of a guilt, I guess, is what I see there, and we have to continually prove that we're innocent. I can give you any other information you would like about our particular operation. I would hope, and perhaps by now I have indicated to you the depth of my concern, and it is real, and I am afraid substantial, and I would hope that before the committee finishes dealing with this that, you know, you can find some way that we can still survive and still offer business to the public. But as the bills are written, I see no other way for us to go really than out of business. I thank you for your time.
Mr. McLucas, I got a couple of questions for you. I guess I wanted to start by saying that I have a number of the same concerns you do about the impact when you start adding up all these fees on various owners. But you made some comments in your letter, and I don't know that you specifically addressed it in your testimony, but in your letter you said, none of us are foolish enough to let product selling for about $1 a gallon leak away when it could be sold at retail. I'm certainly sure that no one has a desire to see gasoline leak away. But do you currently have any system in place for detecting whether or not your tanks are leaking?
Basically, an inventory system that says the gallons that come in have to be registered on the pumps going out, or you know something's wrong.
Okay.
And it's a very simple, brutally straightforward system. But there's meters on each pump, and of course there's a meter on the truck that delivers. And
you bet.
What you sell, what you buy, you better be prepared to sell.
Okay. Where did this? I haven't heard about a $500 fee. Although I'm not saying you're wrong.
Okay.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just trying to figure out where that $500 fee figure came from.
Okay. What I did when I got a copy of the bill and began reading it, and I had been investigating with various purveyors and suppliers of tanks, said, okay, what are the rules? What are the ground rules now? Because I can see a number of potential things coming down the pike, but if I wanted to put in a new tank tomorrow, what would I be held accountable for? And that's where I got the information. I said, okay, first of all, you know, minimally, it's got to be the cathodic protection. You've got to have sensing wells. You've got to have all this 17-pound anodes, et cetera, et cetera. You can use fiberglass tanks at such and such a cost, and you're going to have them tested annually at $300 to $500 per tank. So it came from suppliers of tanks.
Okay.
And
so these would be the tests. I mean, a new tank that meets these kind of standards probably costs, what, $15,000? I mean, a new tank, for starters, costs about $15,000. That's a double-wall tank. And then I wouldn't be a bit surprised if the annual test that would be about $500.
I asked him, I said, what makes this, you know, so much? And he said, I can't tell you exactly how it's done, but he said it involves something about having the liquid stored in the tank at such and such a temperature and circulated and pressure gradients and differences. I don't know. It got very exotic. But I said, okay, I don't need to know the technology. You've scared me enough with the cost. You know, specialized personnel, specialized procedures. And that was his assessment of the annual cost. The thing is, we pumped, I got the figures from my jobber before I came down, and we pumped 25,000 gallons last year. That's total, 12 months. Now, it doesn't take a financial genius to see it. That volume, we're not making a lot of money on it. It's part of our entire operation. But $3,000 to $4,000 gross, maximum. And from that, you have to subtract all the costs we currently have. We just got through trying to amortize about $3,000 worth of new pumps. Pumps we had didn't go over 50 cents a gallon. And we put in meter heads and they went to $1 a gallon, but they didn't go over $1 a gallon. When they got over $1, you couldn't do it anymore. The guy says, look, you know, meters that go that fast, he says, you're going to self-destruct. He says, you got to buy new pumps. So we're still in a 10-year program to amortize over $3,000 worth of new tank or new pumps. To add to that, to this, we say, no, we'll sell and get out. It's just not worth it because you don't make enough to justify it. And potentially, we have another fear. I mean, I have every reason to believe that what Mr. Hansen and Rich says is great, but I would invite the committee when dealing with the federal EPA, and that's what we're dealing with in this bill. I mean, really, the federal requirements are what seem to be driving what we do in Oregon. I would invite you to contact the mayor of the small city of Madras, Oregon, and ask him their particular experience in getting along with the federal EPA with what should have been a minor problem at the city-owned airport, where they had some spills on the ground from fueling up planes and servicing spray planes. They had concentrations in the parts per million less than what was being applied on wheatland adjacent to the city of Madras. But because it was on the municipal airport, it was classified not as a hazardous spill, but as a chemical waste disposal site. And I mean, they were visited with regulations that imposed fines, fees, and forfeitures for every day of a violation. They were also visited with EPA people that could not give them the answer to how to correct the problem. And the whole thing was a catch-22 that went on and on and on and on. And this worries the small operator. I mean, let's say we have a very legitimate leak underground, which can occur. Okay, depending on how the federal people view that and treat it and what set of regulations or statutes they stick us under, I mean, they can kill us in terms of just the first fine that comes down the pike. And you have no appeal, really. In effect, you can't afford to go up against a bevy of federal statutes and federal lawyers to prove that all that happened was somebody forgot and left a valve open for 10 minutes. You know, the whole thing becomes totally unrealistic for the little guy to deal with.
Sure.
So what I'm begging, I guess, in my letter is, this is Oregon, we're concerned, we want to help you, but can we have something that says, you know, there's somebody here we can deal with and we're worried about catastrophic events and carelessness, but we're not out to put anybody out of business.
part of the problem we have is that I think all of us have a desire to see the state of Oregon operate this program rather than the federal government.
Hooray,
which
hooray.
Is just what you said. But the federal government does this in a very neat way. They basically adopt a number of requirements that if you want to assume the program, you have to meet. And you can't run the program unless you meet the federal standard. So there's a bill on there, 116, which is a very thick bill that makes a lot of changes in state law, and the only reason the changes are being made is because this is what it requires to bring us into compliance with federal law. If we want to continue to operate the hazardous waste program in the state of Oregon, we have to make these changes in order to stay in compliance with federal law, and the industries here feel very strongly that they want the state to continue to operate the program rather than the feds, just like you apparently do too. But these kind of changes and these kind of programs are the kind of things we've got to get involved with at a state level to be able to continue to operate the program at a state level rather than a federal level. So, yeah, right, roll your eyes.
We're back to the F-22 I described. I was doing fine in 115 until I came apart, but cannot be less stringent than applicable federal requirements, at which point I turn white. You know, it's just, it's very scary.
That's what we're dealing with here. I mean, well, you know.
I wish you well. If there's anything we can do to help, you have only to call. I thank you very much for letting me.
Let's see if there are any other questions for you. Senator Monroe.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if the rest of you know this, but the Oasis is the favored meeting place of whitewater rafters. And
oh.
I've been there many times to buy my daily permit to float down the chutes and through Horseshoe and all of the other funny rapids as we go along, getting ourselves very wet during the summertime and having a good time. And I know that Mr. McLucas and his staff are always delightfully cordial and friendly to rafters and try and make the rafters trip over to Central Oregon more of an enjoyable experience, and I'd like to thank you for that.
Thank you.
We certainly don't want to do anything that's going to put you out of business or stop that kind of important community service that you provide.
Thank you most kindly.
Further questions for Mr. McLucas?
I'm going to leave while I'm well ahead.
That's right. This is a good time for you to exit. Thank you for coming over. Particularly, I think it was probably snowing pretty hard up over the mountains this morning. So I appreciate your coming. Debbie Gallagher, League of Women Voters of Oregon.
Perhaps the previous witness would like a copy of DBQ's $165.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Debbie Gallagher, Energy Chair for League of Women Voters of Oregon, and a member of the Underground Storage Tank Advisory Committee. I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to you today on Senate Bill 115. The League of Women Voters of Oregon supports the major principles of Senate Bill 115, but we're concerned that the bill does not have specific language making the location of underground storage tanks a matter of public record. The League supports the adoption of a statewide underground storage tank program to monitor and regulate underground storage tanks. Our members agree that consistent standards are crucial to carrying out the program and ensuring the protection of public health and the environment. And while we want to see uniform standards across the state, we also support stringent standards for environmentally sensitive areas. Our members concur that the environmental protection and pollution controls should be considered a cost to providing a service or a product. But we support incentives like the underground storage tank insurance fund or perhaps tax credits as a means to accelerate pollution control. Specific principles in the bill, such as regulating pollution sources, by control and penalties, inspecting and monitoring the pollution sources, and enforcement mechanisms and fees for noncompliance have our support. That's right, as we mentioned earlier, the League is concerned about the emission of underground storage tanks from the public record. We feel it's critical to the protection of public health and welfare that records on the location and condition of underground storage tanks be available to the public. Information on tanks needs to be available for potential property buyers in the state. We don't want to see children, or adults for that matter, suffer serious health effects from playing or living on ground that's been contaminated by a substance stored in leaking underground tanks that no one knew about. nor do we want to see senior citizens lose their life savings and more because they buy a mom-and-pop's gas station only to find out a month after they move in that the tanks leak. This happened to a couple in Washington State, and it cost them over $1 million to clean up the problem. We're concerned, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, that innocent people are going to be hurt simply because there's no place to go to find out if an underground tank is on a piece of property or if it's there, whether it leaks or not. As a state, we do not ensure public health or welfare unless we provide information so that our public can make informed decisions. The League of Women Voters has long supported public access to information about pollution levels and dangers to the health and the environment. This public access cannot be guaranteed unless the information is listed in the public record. The League of Women Voters of Oregon asks this committee to amend Senate Bill 115 and make the Environmental Quality Commission the steward of public records for all underground storage tanks in the state. I've drafted amendments for your consideration, which would amend Section 6 of the bill and address our concerns. A copy of that language is attached to my testimony. Thank you.
There's currently, Rich, help me out here. There's currently an environmental hazard notice provision in the land use law. Is there not?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
What's that called?
Environmental notice provisions.
Okay.
I forget the old one from the last session.
Yeah.
Passed by the
Now, could
Bill
2143. Okay, is that potentially applicable to underground storage tanks or leaking underground storage tanks or?
You would have to amend it to include a site containing a release from an underground storage tank.
It doesn't include that now. I mean, wouldn't it make more sense, rather than just giving this to you to do, wouldn't it make more sense to have that be included in the environmental notice provisions?
That would be
an appropriate
place because then it would appear on the
land use record. Are there any? Well, let me make sure I understand what. So you want to know where every underground storage tank is in the state of Oregon. I mean, you want an inventory of that somewhere.
That's right. If we are, excuse me.
Go ahead. No, please go ahead.
You know, if we are sitting on the potential powder keg that we've been told to expect in the next 5 to 10 years, there's going to be tanks leaking all over the place. Whether it's on some farm, whether someone was put out of business by this bill and just kind of left their tanks there. There are going to be tanks abandoned. And if we don't know where they are, we have no way to make sure that we're protected from whatever may or may not be leaking. If we could trust everyone to tell us the truth about the property we buy or the condition of a tank or something like that, it would be different, but I don't think we have those assurances.
Okay. Further questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Richard Bach, DEQ Advisory Committee.
This would be a perfectly good vehicle.
Pardon me?
This would be perfect.
Mr. Bach.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Richard Bach. I'm a lawyer with the firm Stolwees, Bowley, Fraser & Wise. And my practice is almost exclusively in the area of environmental law, with major emphasis these days on hazardous materials and substances, RCRA, CERCLA, TSCA issues. I'm here today as the chair of the DEQ Advisory Committee on Underground Storage Tanks. Fred Hansen asked me to serve in that position last August, and since then, our committee has been working to draft some legislation that we could bring to the legislature to cover the underground storage tank program. First of all, I understand that you've already had some testimony with respect to this bill from members of my committee, and I was out of town. I'm not privy to just what areas were covered, so I hope I'm not going to duplicate anything, but Let me start out by giving you some of the background of our committee, the work that we did, and the philosophy and the objectives under which we were operating. First of all, the committee was selected by DEQ, and it was a very broad-based committee. We think we had representatives of most of the competing interests involved in the underground storage tank issues, tank users, tank installers, tank testers, tank manufacturers, environmental organizations, local governments, lawyers, manufacturers, the whole spectrum, the whole gamut of people involved. We worked hard to achieve a consensus in the development of this bill among those members of our committee, with the understanding that if any members of the committee had specific problems, they were very free to submit minority reports or come forward to the state legislature to give their objections or to raise the issues that they wanted to. I also want to thank the DEQ staff, which was very helpful to the committee in drafting this particular legislation. Our objective, our mandate, was to attempt to draft enabling legislation which would give the Environmental Quality Commission the authority to develop a program which would allow the state of Oregon to administer underground storage tanks under the 1984 RCRA amendments, the HSWA amendments, which I'm sure you're all familiar with. And as you indicated, you do recognize the fact that there will be regulation of underground storage tanks. Whether it's done by the federal government or by the state of Oregon, there is going to be regulation, and it is going to be at a specific level of standards mandated by Washington, D.C. and by Seattle. And if we don't...